You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. It's September 2006. A kid in Oklahoma named Bartiz Cox flips through channels on TV and is drawn in by something he's never seen before.
Please welcome TV on the Radio.
The rock band TV on the Radio is playing David Letterman's late night show, and it's intense, wrenching, guitar-driven music being played by a group made up mainly of black musicians.
That was the first time I think I saw a black man that looked like me, that sounded like me, that had a story that felt like mine and that I could really relate to. And I remember right after that, getting so deep into guitars, and it kind of was just over from there. I loved hardcore music and punk music, but I didn't see a lot of bands that had black people in it or people of color in it. And I remember hearing about it at the drive-in, and they were all brown kids from El Paso, Texas, who were screaming in Spanish. And I was living in Western Oklahoma, and I was just like, wow, they've made it happen by being themselves.
Young Bartiz was inspired by seeing other people who looked like him playing music he loved. But in his 20s, Bartiz realized he couldn't make it happen for himself. He wasn't able to pay his bills by making music. Still, he held on to the dream. And following stints doing communications in the Obama administration and for various nonprofits, Bartiz finally broke out in the fall of 2020 when he released the album Live Forever under his stage name, Bartiz Strange. Now this month, he's out with a new album, Farm to Table, which finds Bartiz celebrating everything he's achieved while taking his music in new sonic directions. When we sat down to talk, we started off by talking a bit about his childhood in Western Oklahoma.
It's so interesting being a black artist from Oklahoma because there, of course, there are the horror stories that everyone across the country knows about, but there's also such a deep, rich history of black success and power and prominence in Oklahoma. And for my family, we lived in a mostly white part of Oklahoma in Mustang. And my parents, they faced a lot of challenges. And my brother and sister, we faced a lot of challenges too. And you kind of have this upbringing that's kind of predicated on fear. You can't be out this late. You can't date X person. You can't go to X side of town. You need to be home at X time. You know, everything was just about getting to the next day. So I felt like when I moved from Oklahoma to the East Coast, that was kind of the first time that I was able to kind of like peek my head out from the covers and kind of start to ask some bigger questions about who I actually wanted to be and what I actually wanted to do. Because in Oklahoma, it was all about kind of like survival mode in a way. Yeah, it was a different world.
Fascinating to hear you frame it that way. An existence predicated on fear and all of the things you can't do. And especially there's an aspect of parenting, right? Where you're constantly trying to put bumpers and seatbelts and protections around your kids. But ideally, you want your young people to be as free as they can be. And if your whole existence has to be predicated on fear, right, that reduces that freedom.
Right. And it also kind of limits what you think you can do. I tell people, how do you know you want to be a doctor if you've never met a doctor? And that's kind of how I saw music. Like my mom was an opera singer, but I knew I didn't want to do that. I knew I loved music, but I didn't really see how I could do it the way I wanted to do it from Oklahoma until I saw TV on the Radio and bands like that and bands like Beauty Pill with Chad Clark here in DC. That kind of was a big part of me getting the courage to explore and move and decide like, okay, it's time for me to go somewhere else. And I did and got jobs and flourished once I left the state. But despite everything we've talked about, it was still very hard to leave because there's a lot of good people back there that I love still. So it's a, you know, bittersweet vibe.
The new album is Farm to Table. Can we talk about Hennessy?
And they say black folks drink Hennessy, but I want you over me in the dark on a tree. But these days we don't talk anymore.
Tell me the story of Hennessy, because this I love for so many different reasons.
I'm so glad you like that song. That's my favorite song in the album. Over the course of 10 songs, I feel like I'm telling people a lot about my life and how I feel after kind of experiencing a huge transition during the pandemic, right? Like, I put a record out called Live Forever a couple years ago and it blew up. I was able to quit my job. All these incredible things were happening in my life, but it was the worst period of time for everyone else in my life. People were dealing with COVID. People were losing jobs. People were getting divorced. People were just at home with nothing to do. You know, no one knew what to do with themselves. And it was hard to kind of celebrate. And so over the course of this record, it's me celebrating and me talking about this like transition I was experiencing. And after doing all these peaks and valleys, big songs, small songs, personal moments, huge pop moments, Hennessy is kind of like a reminder to the listener and a reminder to myself that I'm just a person. Some days I feel like the rapper in Cosigns. Some days I feel like the little boy in Tours. But at the end of it, I'm just a kid. You know, I'm just a guy that makes music in his basement and I really just want to be loved. That's kind of what the song is about. It's kind of hard for a lot of people to see a black person as someone that has a lot of ideas or thoughts or emotions. They are so quick to categorize us. But that song is saying, like, I know you think black folks just drink Hennessy, but I want you to just really see me for who I am. I'm a person that carries a lot, that feels a lot, that expresses a lot. I want to connect with you on more than one level. And that's what that song is about.
Now, we already jumped to Farm to Table, but I do want to go back for a minute to Live Forever. And again, back to this like 2020 juncture, because that album was getting such a positive reception and music was taking a very particular relevance for so many of us to sort of make it through that pre-vaccine moment. But what does success feel like, or success in the thing that you love and are finally doing feel like, when you can't exactly go out of the house?
Well, you know, everyone has asked me that. They've been like, oh, it must be a bummer that you can't tour. But I was looking at all them saying like, yo, like I just got to quit my job. I quit my job. I was getting a lot of production work for the first time. I got so much production work that I didn't have to go to my day job anymore. So even though I wasn't touring, I was making records for people. I got like a studio down here that I had access to, so bands were flying in and I was tracking records. So I was busier doing the thing I loved more than I'd ever done it in my life. And then as soon as the pandemic kind of let up just enough, I mean, we started touring, and I've been touring for the last year, and it's been all on Live Forever. So I felt like I kind of got the best of it all. You know, the moment happened, I got to enjoy that moment with my family and my partner in our house. I let the transitions come in, but we were able to like sort through them on our own time, and then, you know, go out on the road and do the thing I've always wanted to do. I honestly don't feel like I lost anything. I feel like I kind of was given this gift where I was able to process it and in a timeline that was like healthy for me and my family. So yeah, I think it happened the way it was supposed to happen.
As I'm listening to you talk about work, talk about the multiple chapters and also just talk about the, like, whatever else it was, quitting your job. Like you said that two or three times, like, I got to quit my job. Like, do you all notice what that is? I heard that in the album, in the ways that you talk about your dad and this way that he was working, always presumably rushing around. What are you trying to capture about the story between you and your dad?
I think that for me, I always felt like my parents made all these sacrifices. So I could like be better, make more money, have a better job, live in a nicer neighborhood, kind of move up a notch, right? And I think a lot of Black people and a lot of immigrants feel this. All of the sacrifices that were made weren't made for me to do something I want to do. It was made for me to do something bigger. But the older I got, the more I realized my parents, they did all that so I could be happy, healthy, safe, you know, more so than make money. And I saw no point in like working all these jobs and being depressed and exhausted and stressed and honestly not making a ton of money, just making more money, just putting myself in a situation where I'm just going to work until I'm 60 and then what? And I was like, I think my parents would rather me be happy, do something I love to do. And, you know, that realization was kind of what inspired this deeper dive into the things I love, which is like music and music production. And so I think in that song, Heavy Heart, I'm saying, like, why work so hard if you can't fall back? You know, why let guilt be like this primary, you know, motivator in why you work so hard? Why depend on a heavy heart? You can just do the thing you love, be happy, you know? And that means a different thing for everybody. I wasn't able to just quit my job and do music day one. I mean, I've been doing this for many, many, many years, but I needed to do that just so I could stay sane and just so I could eventually make this transition.
There's another father-child relationship at the core of the one of the tracks on the new album, Hold the Line. And this is really about George Floyd, and particularly about George Floyd's daughter.
Again, you've taken something of mine. You're reaching for more than my life. What happened to the man with that big old smile? He's calling to his mother now.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this track came to be?
I live in D.C. I was living in Northeast D.C. right off of Binning Road when George Floyd was murdered and when the marches started coming to D.C., right? And I remember just watching Gianna Floyd speak on the news about her father dying in this extremely brutal and public way. And my heart just broke because Black kids don't get to be kids very long. Something happens. There's like a time before the thing happened and a time after the things happen where you realize that you're Black and your life isn't going to be like everybody else's life. And I felt like for her, it was that times 100, you know, having to see her father die that way and then have to address the free world and speak on that. I felt like a lot of people admired her and I just felt really bad for her because I felt like that kid's childhood is gone now. She'll never be the same again. And we've taken that from her, you know, as a society by kind of putting her in this position and in so many ways. And my heart just went out to her and her family. But the words like hold the line came from seeing all these people come in DC and start to fight for justice around that situation and kind of like shining a light on this continued insanity that happens in this country. And like that song and kind of like the marches, there's no exact call to action, just us all mad and confused and sad and saying like, we need something to change. And that's kind of what that song is. I don't have the answers, but I know what's wrong. And that's kind of what that song is about.
And I feel like we've come full circle here with a vision about young people and young Black folks and freedom and the capacity to actually grow up, to be yourself. You've talked a couple times about what, how can you, even if you have a sense that your path isn't quite right, that it can help a lot to have that path breaker in front of you, a little bit of a guiding light, a notion of what is possible. So you have any light you want to shine, a little message perhaps for young Black folks who might also still be looking for the courage to be fully themselves?
For me, I personally think the most inspiring and revolutionary act a Black person can have is to make something new, creating anything. It doesn't even have to be publicly viewed. It could be journaling. It could be writing a song. It could be stitching pictures together. I think that like expression is so important. And I don't see enough avenues for Black people to be able to express all the things that they want sometimes. And that can kind of manifest itself in a number of ways. But, you know, I can't stress like how valuable your voice and your opinion is, especially in a world where people are always telling you that what you have to say and what you think and what you create don't matter. And historically, that's kind of what we've been taught. I feel like through my project and through what I've been doing, it's like, I feel like when I make something new, I'm putting something out into the universe that it's bigger than me. It's about the people that came behind me and the people that are going to come ahead of me. And I feel like the more Black people who are just making things generally, it's inspiring for us. Like, it's good for us to do that. So I would just encourage you to make things, whatever that may be.
Party Strange, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Melissa.
Damn, just got out the van. Universal hit me about some texts I need to send. Need my address for some checks that they forgot to send. Time to flip this transit. I think I'ma need the bins. I'm in LA. I'm with Phoebe. I'm a genius. Damn. I'm in Chi-Town. I'm with Lucy. I just got the skin. Hit up Courtney. That's my Aussie. I already stand. I'm on FaceTime, I'm with Justin, we already friends. We already friends. We already friends.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.